You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
All right, well, we are on part two of the story second edition, revised and expanded, because we did the story series back in 2020, fun times, March. Yeah, great. We have fond memories of March 2020. And so what we're doing as, I don't know, maybe I said this or someone already said this, Justin said this, we're going from the beginning to the end of the Bible. And last week we did an overview of the number of books in the Old Testament, number of books in the New Testament, how it all fits together. And as we've already said, you need those notes because we're going to be flying here. And so that's where we are. We good? Good. Okay, can you turn on the house lights because we're going to need some lighting here. So, again, QR code, if you didn't get it, please get it, and we're moving on. So I want to talk about this verse real quick, and we're going to come back to it, but you already heard Kendra read this one from Genesis chapter 12, verse 1 to 3. It says this: "The Lord had said to Abram, 'Leave your native country, your relatives, and your father's family, and go to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you, and I will make you famous, and make you famous, and you will be a blessing to others. I will bless those who bless you, I will bless those who bless you, and curse those who treat you with contempt. All the families on earth will be blessed through you.'" So we're going to come back to that, but the reason you've heard it twice already is that it is going to be a theme that we are going to see through the rest, or not the rest, because we haven't started yet, through the entire Bible as we move through. So let's just review a little bit the Old Testament flow. Now listen, I need your insight and your help, okay? Now to be clear, the heat is off and the air conditioning is on. So last week, I understand we lulled you into a coma because of the heat temperature. You're not on your knees, so you don't have that excuse either. You are sitting in chairs with air conditioning. So I want your feedback, your involvement. Are you with me? Okay, very good. So we're going to review a little bit last week because we're going to be in the Old Testament today. So let's talk about the Old Testament flow. We're going to throw up how many books of the Old Testament are there? 39, because 3 is Old Testament is 9, 3, 9, 39 books. Okay, so here are all 39 books of the Bible. We talked about this last week. This is review. We need to go faster because I have so much to do because we're going to end up at Joshua by the end of this morning. So this left-hand column here, what do we call that whole category there? History. Where did that come from? Oh, wherever that was. History. Yes, this is history, okay? Are you with me here? What is the first column? Come on, people. Come on, come on, come on, come on, come on. Ah, caffeine is in me, and we're going to get it into you. Okay, so that's history. What is the second column? These books are poetic, so you would call them? Poetry. Thank you very much. And this third group of this column over here, these are all the what? What is this called? The prophets. Right, right. Okay, right. That's the prophecy category. Now, this left-hand column, the first five books, because the Latin word for five is penta, the first five books of the Bible, what do we call that subdivision? Pentateuch, right. That means five scrolls, literally, is what it means. The first five books of the Bible, the Pentateuch. And then what do we call the rest of this? Because we don't really have a great name for it. We just call that history. Yes, history. I'm losing some of you. Okay, so just in case you just, okay. What do we call that middle column? It's right there. Poetry. Okay, all right. Very good. That's poetry. Okay, now moving to that's your right. The right-hand column, the first five books of prophecy, these are longer books than some of the other books of prophecy. So we call these the what? Major prophets. Right. Very good. Now, if you're not tracking at all, give me this one. Okay? You can give me this one. So if the big books are the major prophets, these smaller books, we would call them the minor prophets. Excellent. So again, what we're going to be looking at in this story of the Bible, as we go from Genesis to Revelation, and specifically today in the Old Testament and next week, the next few weeks, we're looking at this history side. And you're going to find that poetry and prophecy happen during those times. So if you read your Bible from Genesis to Malachi, it is just going to keep jumping around because it's not a historical writing in terms of chronology. So we're going to be looking at the chronology and how these other pieces fit in there. Are you with me? Amy, good. Thank you, Amy. The rest of you are a little dilly. Are you with me? Okay, good. Okay, good. Okay, so here's the point for today, because we're going to look at these characters. And the point for today is that the characters in the story collide with the Creator. Because we're going to see that God, there are characters that we're going to meet, and God created them, and they're going to be kind of running up against the Creator, and it's going to cause some serious problems for all of history until God resolves it. But we're going to talk about that in like 3 or 4 weeks from now. So that's the point today, and I want to give you a one-minute summary of the Bible. So watch this.
1, 2, 3. Bible in a minute. Earth made Adam, Eve. Cain kills Abel, has to leave. Boring genealogy. Great flood. Olive leaf. Tower Babel. Abraham. Sodom and Gomorrah. And Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, Moses. Ten commands. Promised land. Judges, David, Solomon. Sent away to Babylon. Job. Then a bunch of songs. Proverbs and the Song of Songs. Major prophets. Lion Den. Minor prophets. Bethlehem. Golden, myrrh, and frankincense. Satan and Samaria. Choose disciples, other chief. Walk on water, 1,000 feet. Lazarus, big tree. Last supper, Gethsemane. Blood, money, third to now. Pontius Pilate, public trial. 40 lashes to the tree. Why have you forsaken me? Third day, empty tomb. Reappears, 5 wounds. Acts of the apostles, Jack's epistles, and apocalypse.
So they're a little bit faster than me, and probably a little bit more fundamental than me. I'm not wearing the white shirt and the black tie. But we're gonna work through that from beginning to end here. And the first chapter, we're looking at 12 chapters of Bible history, of the story, because every story has a chapter. And so we're going to start today with chapter 1, which is a great place to start a story. And chapter 1 is creation. Now, I want you to say on the count of three, creation, okay? 1, 2, 3. Creation. That is chapter 1 of the story, and this covers Genesis 1 through 11. And so with these chapters, and if you have the YouVersion notes, they're right there in front of you. Which, if you had YouVersion notes, you should have been able to answer the other things too, because it was all there. Anyway, but creation, there's a picture associated with each of these, and I'm going to draw you a picture. And we're going to make a big world, and we're going to do like, I don't know, maybe there's Canada, and there's Florida, and comes down Central America and Mexico, and there's South America, and Brazil, and all that, something like that. And then there's probably something here, who knows, and maybe something over here. But in this picture, we've got God speaking creation into existence. And so that's the official picture for this there. So every time you think of that creation, you can think about that picture, and you have it in your notes. It is copyright Sean 2025, Sean David Fitch, so do not steal this and try to use it on your own. Because, you know, I'm kidding. Okay, this is just a circle with some squiggles on it. But anyway, that's creation. And so creation, the chapter in creation, we learn about four events. So four events in creation is what creation is about. And the first event of creation is creation. The first event in creation is creation. And this is where God created the world, created everything. And so we're going to break down creation here a little bit and look at it, because there were 6 days of creation, and then on the seventh day, God rested. And I want to show you a couple of quick things here, and you have some blanks to fill in your notes there. But the creation has a pattern. The first 3 days and the second 3 days, or days 1 through 3 and days 4 through 6, actually are connected. So this will be a way to help you remember what happens. But in creation, God speaks, and it is. And that's where Genesis begins. And so the first day of creation, we've got what I'm calling air. This is sort of like Navy SEAL. Navy SEALs stand for sea, air, and land. This is out of order. But we've got air. And so this category of air, God says, let there be light. Let there be light. And there was. And so God created light and out of nothing. And so that was day one. And then it says day two, that this is related to the sea. God says, okay, I want there to be a separation between kind of the sky and this other thing. We're going to call the other part sky, and we're going to call the other part waters. And so he separates the sky and the waters. And so it's sea related. You with me with sea? You got that? Okay. And then the third day, God then says, okay, let's create this thing that's different, and we're going to bring land out from the sea. And he says, then let there be plants. Let's let plants grow on this land. And so we've got air, sea, and land. So he creates lights. He creates the sky and waters. He creates land and plants on day three. Then its pattern repeats. And on day four, God speaks and he creates the sun, moon, and stars. So there's going to be a bright light to govern the day and not as bright light to govern the night. And if you've been watching outside, it has been a very bright moon over the last few days. So that's the sun and moon and the stars. And so, again, going back to the air side, what are these luminaries? God creates sun, moon, and stars. And then on day five, going with the air, sea, land, he says, now let these sea, let's put fish in the sea, and let's put birds in the sky. And so, again, the pattern is kind of repetitive there. And then on day six, God says, okay, and this is kind of the big one. He says, let's create animals. He creates, I say let's, because God is Trinity, and that's a whole other kind of category that we're not going to talk about. We did a series called Three about that a number of years ago. You can find that on our website. But God creates animals and humanity. And Genesis 1 describes all this, and Genesis 2 is a deep dive zoom in to God creating humanity. And of course, we'll talk about that in a second. But then on day 7, God rests. And there's a Hebrew word for rest. And this wasn't because God was tired. God wasn't worn out from creating. He's God, and he could like, and boom, anything can happen. He doesn't get tired. But he rested. And the Hebrew word for rest is Shabbat. And so this idea of Shabbat or Sabbath becomes a major theme throughout the Old Covenant, the Old Testament law. FYI, the New Testament, Sabbath is no longer part of it. It's no longer part of God's new covenant through Jesus. So spoiler. But the old covenant, this idea of rest of Shabbat is an important thing. And so that is how the pattern of creation went. And so God created this man out of the dust of the earth, and he named him Adam, which means ground. And he names him, and he brings all those animals that he created before Adam, and he's like, you know what? There's something missing, Adam. No suitable helper was found. So God laid Adam to sleep and pulled a rib from him and created a woman. And Adam was like, whoa, man. Because she completed him, literally. That was his rib. And so this Adam and Eve, and they lived in this garden. It was the Garden of Eden. And it was a place of wonderful perfection. All the animals were there. There were no needs. They ate, except God said, don't eat from this one tree. This one tree, I don't want you. You can do anything else. And we don't know how long Adam and Eve lived in the garden. It could have been 20 years. It could have been 2,000 years, because this thing that we know as death didn't exist. So God created them in this garden. And then we get to the second event, and that is the fall. We're not talking about autumn. We're talking about the fall of humanity, where sin entered the world. And so you've got this moment where Adam and Eve are tempted by a serpent. And it said that Satan was connected to this serpent. And he's tempting them and said, did God really say, and use a deception to trick Eve and Adam, who was right there, into eating the fruit from this tree? And the instant that that happened, everything changed. Oh, I just heard a sniffle. I just heard someone clear their throat. That's because of Adam and Eve. Yep, they're coughing. Yep, Adam and Eve. Oh, that pain you're feeling right now, Adam and Eve. Yeah, all of that. Because of the sin, because of the fall of humanity, sin entered the world, and now everything was messed up. Everything changed. Not only, well, let me tell you what changed. Here in Genesis chapter 3, where we have the fall, this is a passage from that, and you've got it in YouVersion there in front of you. And after all this happened, God's like, what did you guys do? And like, well, I hid and I was afraid and all that. And God's like, okay, you guys, you screwed up. You had one thing, one job, just don't eat from that tree. And that's where they ate. And so God comes to them and says to the serpent, Adam and Eve, and not in that order, serpent, Eve, and Adam. He says, the Lord God said to the serpent, he says, because you have done this, I'm going to put, he says, you're going to crawl on your belly. And we don't know what that word, did they walk around? Was it like that snake from Robin Hood, the old Disney Robin Hood or something like that? We don't know. But he says, now you're going to crawl on your belly to the serpent. And he says, I'm going to put enmity between you and the woman. I'm going to put tension there between Satan and, as he says, between her, your offspring and hers. And so now there is going to be tension between humanity, because guess what? You are Eve's offspring, and so am I. There's going to be tension between humanity and Satan. And there's going to be problems there. And I'm going to pause that. And he says, then he goes to the woman, and there's a curse there. He says to the woman, he says, childbirth, you're going to have pain in childbearing. So, again, yay! Twins, beautiful. Sorry if it wasn't wonderful process for fun because, you know, Adam and Eve. And then he says to Adam, he says, because you listened to your wife and ate from the fruit, cursed is the ground because of you. So not just the humanity, but everything is messed up. And he says, because of this, and that's where the dot, dot, dot there, the ellipses, he says, you know, you're going to have to work. And the ground isn't just going to be a boop, there's fruit, you get to eat. You're going to have to work for it. You're going to have to till the soil, and there's going to be weeds and thorns, and it's going to be hard. And he goes on and says, you're going to have to work this ground until you return to the ground. Since from it you were taken, because he was from out of the dust, for dust you are, and to dust you will return. God says, Adam and Eve, you disobeyed me. And now this thing that you never knew before, called death is in the world. But the interesting thing about this, the part that I skipped, is what is called the proto-evangelion. And proto-evangelion is a Latin term, comes from a Greek term. And if you remember from the breaking news series, we learned that the word evangelion means good news or gospel. And this is called the proto-evangelion because it is the very first gospel. Because God said, look, Adam and Eve, you screwed up. The earth is going to suffer forever because of you. There's going to be sickness. There's going to be pain. Childbirth isn't going to be wonderful. And you're going to die. He says, but Satan, there's going to be enmity between you and humanity, between your offspring and hers. So an offspring of this woman, a human offspring of this woman, says he will crush your head and you will strike his heel. And I kind of wish it was reversed because the Hebrew is read in reverse. So in English, we might read it and they kind of building up the tension. You're going to strike his heel. There's going to be a descendant of Eve, and you're going to strike his heel like, ow, that hurts. But he's going to crush your head, and you are going to be destroyed. So here in Genesis 3, God says, but I'm not done. Because we're working this story. I'm telling this story. I'm shaping this story. And someday, a descendant of this woman is going to come to this earth and will once and for all crush Satan. Who could that be? I don't know. You'll have to wait for a few more weeks. So, creation, fall. Those are the first two events that we see. Then the third event is what we're calling the flood, which we don't call it the flood. That's what it's called. And basically what happened is after Adam and Eve, they have Cain and Abel. That didn't go so well. And then just generations come along and along. And the world gets worse and worse and walks further and further and further away from God. And God created this thing and he's like, you know what? This is not what I had in mind. I'm going to destroy it all because I'm done. You know, maybe you've had one of those moments. You're putting together your Legos when you were little. And you're like, this just didn't work. Just start all over. And then I'm going to step on it for fun. No, don't do that. Stepping on Legos hurts. And that's what God was going to do. And he had the right to because he created us. It was his creation. But then there was Noah. And there was this guy named Noah. And Noah was faithful to God and followed God. And God's like, you know what? That's enough for me. And so he said to Noah and his family, look, I'm going to put you into this big old boat. And what I'm going to do is you're going to get in this boat, and this thing called rain is going to come. And it's going to rain and 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 rain. And eventually all of humanity except for you and your family will be saved. Oh, and by the way, 2x2 animals. So 2x2 animals are going into this ark. And then the rest of the world is going to be destroyed by flood and drowning and suffocating and going, oh, I'm going to die, I'm going to die. It's awful. And they're all dying everywhere, bodies floating everywhere. And then we throw it on our nursery room wall for our kids. That's Noah and the Ark, kids. So, but that's what God did. And that's the flood. And so that's the fourth event, or third event. Then the fourth event is what we're calling tower. And the tower is what you've probably heard, the Tower of Babel. And I always grew up learning that the people got together, and of course time had passed. Noah's descendants, you know, grew and grew and grew. And the people were like, you know what? Let's build a tower to reach the heavens. And I always grew up thinking like they built some kind of like, you know, what's that tower in Dubai? Burj Khalifa or something, you know, Empire State Building. They're going to reach the heavens. But that really wasn't what this was. It was called a ziggurat, which was a temple. It was that type of temple. And they're like, we're going to show everyone how great we are, that we're basically like God. So we're going to build this tower. And at that moment, God was like, you're not God. And I'm just going to show you real quickly. And so, boom, with a word or whatever he did there, just a wink or a hint, maybe a little nose wiggle. Some of you are old enough. But then instantly everyone started speaking different languages. And they're like, hey, Bob, can you bring that board over here? And Bob's like, ¿qué? ¿Qué? ¿Cómo? ¿Por qué quieres esta madera? ¿Aquí? ¿Esta madera? And the other guy's like, what, Bob? Madera. ¿Necesita madera? ¿Por qué necesita construir la edificio? Dude, I don't know what he's saying, man. I'm out. And so they stopped building because they couldn't understand each other because God changed the languages. And those languages spread throughout the world. But those are the four main events of chapter one, creation. And I got to tell you, I'm not going fast enough. So for creation, chapter one is called... Okay, give me more. Okay, and we're just going to read what's on the screen. Okay, and the four events of creation are... You with me? Okay, that's Genesis 1 through 11. Now, things are going to change a little bit because we're getting into chapter 2. And chapter 2 is called generations. And I want you to say generations on the count of three. One, two, three. Very good. Generations. And now we're going to be looking at some things here. And of course, as you do with, you know, each of these chapters, there's going to be a picture. And the picture is this. Something like that. That is eyes. What do I have on this? Okay. And then an arm and then, you know, a staff. Staff. So there. That is our picture of a patriarch, a guy, copyright 2025, Sean D. Fitch. Do not try to reproduce that illegally anywhere either. But that is the image that we're looking at because we're going to be looking at four people. Four main people in the generations segment, the generations chapter of the Bible. And the first person that we're going to meet is a guy named Abraham. So up to this point, we don't really know where things, the story of history of the Bible is just kind of happening. But now, in Genesis chapter 12, we start to get a location. We start to get some specifics. And we meet this guy named Abraham. And Abraham is important. Here's why. Because God said. And just for the record, as a side note, this is not in my notes. This is not in your notes. But how often do we think, well, I did this thing, so God owes me. Or I did this horrible thing, so God doesn't love me. Or this person did something, and so they don't deserve God's love. Or this person didn't do something, or I did great things, and so God should love me more. That's not the way God works. God chose Abraham because God chose Abraham. He said, you're going to be my chosen person. And have you ever heard of the chosen people of Israel? That's where it comes from. And so God chooses Abraham and he makes this covenant with Abraham. And again, this covenant, we already looked at the passage twice. We're going to look at it once more. But this covenant was a promise. And a covenant was an Old Testament. We use the word kind of today, kind of. But a covenant was a binding agreement. And it required some things from both parts. And the covenant that God made with Abraham was what was called an unconditional covenant. And an unconditional covenant meant that God was going to do something and Abraham's part was being Abraham. That was it. There are other covenants in the Bible. They required this and then you would do this. God would do this. You would do this. But for this covenant, God said, I'm doing this thing. And we see it in Genesis 12 and then in Genesis 15 as well. And this covenant, this is important, had three very important elements. Element number one was place. Can you say that with me on three? One, two, three. Very good. A place. God says here, and this is what we're looking at in Genesis 12. God says to Abram, by the way, his name was Abram. God changed his name to Abraham later. Abraham means the father of many. Oops, spoiler. We'll get to that in a second. He says, leave your native country, your relatives, and your father's family, and go to the land that I will show you. He says, Abraham, I'm giving you a land. I'm going to give you a place. There is going to be a land. And Abraham, I promise that this will be your land. I promise this land. Abraham, this is promised land. And so when we start talking about some of the story later and they talk about going to the promised land, this is that land, the promised land that God promised to Abram. And so Abraham was chosen by God. So you guys might want to watch your feet a little bit because you're going to be on TV. All right, so I want to talk about a couple things. Oh, my handy dandy pointer. I upgraded. Because I kept getting in the way. So I upgraded. And I want to know, we talked about this last week, what is this river here at the top? This is the top. The Tigris River. Very good, very good. And then underneath it, this other river is called the what? Euphrates. Tigris and Euphrates. Where's Euphrates? There we go. And this is called the Mesopotamia. This is the Fertile Crescent. And then down here, you have this body of water. It was very big in the 90s. There was a war that kind of happened there. This is the what? Persian Gulf. Right, right. So that's the Persian Gulf. Very good. Now, what is this other important land over here? Israel? Yeah, Israel. That's important. Very important. This is the land of Israel. Now, it's in parentheses because technically it's not called Israel yet because, you know, we don't even know who Israel is yet. Shh, he'll come a little bit later. But this is called the land of Israel. Now, what we know is that God called Abram out of the land of Ur. And we think that, scholars think that Ur is somewhere over in this general vicinity. We're not sure exactly where. There we go. Ur. So it's got a question mark. And so Ur was most likely over here. And what happened is God said to Abram, and this is so important. God said, leave your country, leave your family and friends, and go to the spot that's GPS coordinates 6,444 west times 622.23 north. That's not what God did. God didn't say, go over and you're going to go like 400 miles and you'll be over there. No, God said, go now, go to the land that I will show you. So Abram had to leave Ur by faith and just go and leave everything that he knew back here to go to this land that eventually God would show him that's here. So Abram eventually settles here in this land. Again, not yes necessarily Israel yet, but that's where he goes. So let's come back up here, and I've got a map. Oh, I've got a pretty map for you if you want to see the pretty map. You also have this in your notes, and we've got a couple other things combined in there. But Abraham, that was the first part, was the place of this covenant. The second thing that God promised to Abraham or gave him this covenant was a people. He gave him a place and then a people. And then continuing on with that passage, so place, people, you need to fill those in there. He says, leave your covenant, go to the land, I will show you. I will make you into a great nation. And the Hebrew word for nation here doesn't mean that you're going to have a political, you know, elections and a process where you're going to become this nation. No, it meant you yourself are going to be a great, your family is going to be like the size of a nation. Your descendants will be the size of a nation. Now, I need to clarify, Abram and his wife Sarai did not have any kids at all. And God's like, you're going to be a great nation. And later God says in Genesis 15, he says, your descendants will be like the sand in the seashore, or the stars in the sky. There's going to be a lot of you. There's going to be a lot of little Abrams all over the place. And he says, that is going to be the second part of this covenant, is that Abram, I'm promising you a people, that you are going to become a great nation. You are going to become a massive, massive nation. And, you know, think about that for you guys. Like, God said that to you. I mean, I've got four kids. Some of you have more than that. Like, still, kind of a long way off from a nation. But God says that. That's the second part of the promise, is place and then a people. And then the third part of the promise, or this covenant, I should say, is that God makes a promise to Abraham. And this promise is the last part of the verse in Genesis chapter 12. He says, I will bless you and make you famous, and you will be a blessing to others. I will bless those who bless you and curse those who treat you with contempt. And I like the NLT here. The Hebrew word here, some of you might have familiar with this as I will bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you. And we kind of think, like, what is he going to swear at them? Like, that doesn't seem very godlike. But the idea of blessing means God is active and present in your life. I'm going to be alive in you. I'm going to show up for you, Abram, and your people. And he says, for anyone that curses you, and the word curse here, or the word treat with contempt is a better phrase. If people are like, who do you think you are? God's not with you. He's like, oh, I'm gonna get involved there. And there's actually two Hebrew words here. The one that's treat with contempt means if someone treats you with contempt. But the word for curse actually means to bind or to stop. And so if people start mocking you, Abraham, saying, who do you think you are? God's like, oh, I got your back. I got your back, Abe. All right, you and me, we're good, Abe. So it was a place, a people, and a promise. Because he says, all the families on earth. Now, just out of curiosity, raise your hand if you're a part of a family. Okay, all right, put your hands down. Now, raise your hand if you're on the earth. Okay, good. So this is you. God says, Abraham, I'm going to bless the entire world through you. What is that going to look like? I have to wait till second week of December. How is the whole world going to be blessed through Abraham? But he says, God makes this covenant with Abraham that is a place, a people, and promise. So say those three things with me on the count of three. Next slide. One, two, three. Place, people, promise. Place, people, promise. It's going to matter. So you got Abraham. He's the first person that we see in this, the four people. Then Abraham, when he is 100 years old, finally has a son, his only son named Isaac. And God says to Abraham, I want you to sacrifice Isaac on the Mount Moriah. I want you to bring him up there and sacrifice him to me. And that kind of seems crazy. Wait, God, this promise, great nation, I'm 100, you know, having kids, kind of really not my thing at this point. And now I need to get rid of this guy. And so he takes him to Mount Moriah, and he picks him up and places him on the altar. And we call that the Moriah carry. And he takes him and places him on the altar. And then God says, no, stop. I believe your faith. And he says, here, there's going to be a ram. And so Isaac grows up. Abraham dies. And he has a son. Now we're in our third character. His son's name is Jacob. And we did a whole series called The Deceiver about Jacob. And Jacob, the name Jacob means deceiver, heel grasper, one who lies, one who deceives. And Jacob grows up, lives, and he has a twin brother, Esau. And there's all sorts of things that happen. You can listen to watch the Deceiver series from a couple years ago. And so we're going to learn more about him. But he ends up having 12 kids. He ends up having 12 sons. And in the middle of this, I said this last week, like I said, the rest of the Bible, the Old Testament, fits during this. In the middle of the time of the generations, in the time of these four people, is this other guy named Job. And we don't know exactly where the book of Job took place in there, but it's during the time of generations. So somewhere here around Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and the fourth guy, that Job shows up on the scene, and his story takes place there. So even though Job is way later in your Bible, it actually takes place much earlier. So somewhere in there. And just to kind of continue with our map down here. Oh, my fingers aren't pointing anymore. All right, so we've got these locations. Just for what it's worth, right around here is where they think the land of Uz was. Uz is where Job was from. Abraham was from Ur, and Job was from Uz. So, the names were, you know, easy. Easy to pronounce, I suppose. But they think Job was from this general area because of some of the locations. But his life was taking place. Meanwhile, Abraham, Isaac are both here. Abraham's dead now. Isaac is here. And they're in this land of Israel. And Jacob is now here. And Jacob has these 12 kids. And by the way, there's your pretty map again. And you have that in your notes there from YouVersion. And so Jacob's in this land. He has 12 kids. And he has 12 sons, and these 12 sons are important. God actually says to Jacob, "Hey, look, this promise I made to your grandpa Abraham, I'm going to continue that promise through you." And so now these 12 sons of his are his kids, and God says to you, "You know what, Jacob? I'm changing your name because your name was deceiver, but I'm doing something through you. I'm going to continue this promise through you because you're one of Abraham's descendants, and I'm changing your name to Israel." Which means God fights for you. So Jacob's name is now Israel. Do we know that name? Yes, we do. That's why the nation is called Israel. So he has these 12 sons. And his last two sons, without getting into all the details, one was Joseph, one was Benjamin. And Joseph is our fourth main character. And Joseph was dad's favorite. Joseph and Benjamin were dad's favorite. The older 10 kids didn't like that very much, so they do what every older sibling does, is they sell their younger sibling into slavery. I mean, that's what you guys did, I know, I'm sure. You're like, hey, kids, stop selling your brother into slavery. But that's what they did. They sold him into slavery, and so they were here in this land of Israel. And here, get my pointer, or just I'll just stand here. I'm not going to point right now. That's rude. So they're in the land of Israel, 12 kids, and they're like, we don't like Joe. Joe is not our favorite. They sell him into slavery, and these guys buy him. And they eventually buy him, and then they sell him to someone else. And eventually, and I guess we have this on the map, eventually Joseph ends up, now I need my finger pointer. Joseph ends up down here near this river. What is this river down here? The Nile, right, the Nile. This is the Nile River, and that means that this is the Nile. What is this nation here? Egypt, right? He's down there, and so he's down. He gets sold into slavery down here in Egypt. And in Egypt, God is with him. God says, Joseph, I know your brothers were mistreating you, but I'm with you. I've got you. And he says, I'm gonna continue to watch out for you. And Joseph, through multiple things and even some really rough things that he goes through, God raises him out of prison to be number two to the Egyptian leader. What's the name of the Egyptian leader? No, sorry, don't answer the name. What is the title of the Egyptian leader? Pharaoh. Pharaoh is a title, not a name. That was the title. Another word would be king. He was the king. And so Joseph was number two to Pharaoh. And I don't know what's going on with my computer. So he was number two to Pharaoh. And I might be going out of order here. So we're just winging it, right? But after time, God gives Joseph this vision while he's in Egypt. And he says, Joseph, there is going to be a 7 years of plenty and then 7 years of famine. And he said, what you need to do is store up what you can during those 7 years of plenty, and then you will have enough for the 7 years of famine. And so this happens 7 years. They're storing things up, and God is with Joseph, number two to Pharaoh, and things are getting better and better, and they're storing things up. Well, then 7 years goes by, and the famine hits the land. And it doesn't just hit Egypt. It hits the entire land. And so these guys here, by the way, Jacob, Israel, thinks that Joseph's dead. And so they're all here and they're like, what are we going to do? We don't have anything. And one of the brothers is like, hey, you know, Dad, I hear that Egypt's got lots of food. Maybe we can go down there and ask the second in command of Pharaoh. I don't even know who he is, but I hear some guy's second in command. Maybe we can go ask him for some help. And so they go down, and through a process of really cool tension, you got to read the story in Genesis. Really cool tension. The brothers realize, oh crap. They said crap. That was the Hebrew word. This is our brother, and he's second in command. We're all dead. We're done. But instead, Joseph says, no. No, God sent me. Or God had me the whole time. And you intended to harm me, but God intended it for good. Because God's got me. And look, I don't want you guys just to come here. I want you to bring the whole family. Go back and get Jake. Dad, we call him Dad. We don't call him Jake. Go get Jake Israel and bring him down here and come down to be with us. And we will provide for you. And Pharaoh's like, dude, Joe, this is your family? We're going to build him a nice place. We'll set him up in Goshen. That'll be a really nice territory here in Egypt. And you guys will just live here. We got your back. I love you, Joe. I love your family. So they all move down to Egypt. And here's a fancy map, I think. Is that where I am? Because I got nothing here. Okay. So give me my fancy map. There's the fancy map. And then there's an interesting thing that happens. Good. I'm tracking. I'm good. I'm on track. So while they're down there, it's time for Jake to die. Jacob, Israel. I'm saying Jacob. That's the same guy. It's time for him to die. And not time for him to die. Like, hey, it's time. All right. Sorry. See you guys. Like, he's old and he's dying. And so he brings all of his kids to him. And he said, I want to give you my big final blessing. And so he blesses all of his kids. And Joseph has two sons. And as an honor to Joseph, because of what he did to save the Israelites or to save Jacob and his family, he says, I'm going to adopt your two sons as my own. And so he adopts Ephraim and Manasseh, in place of Joseph, which is a huge honor. And so he blesses Ephraim and Manasseh instead of Joseph. And he goes through all these different blessings. And he gets to Levi, and he says, and we don't have time, we didn't talk about this, but Levi did some things that he shouldn't have done. And Jacob's like, Levi, what's your problem? I'm looking at you. He says, Levi, because of what you did, you're never going to have your own land. You're going to be scattered among your brothers. I was like, okay, whatever. I don't know what that means. Okay, fine. We're going to find out later that Levi will never have their own land. But anyway, so there's these blessings that he gives to his kids. And he stops here, or I'm going to stop here, in Genesis chapter 49, when he gets to Judah. And so Jacob is blessing all, they're all down here. I'm getting ready to die. I just want to share my final thoughts and some things that God has told me. And he says, Judah, my son, Judah, you are a young lion. I hit my move minutes. You're a young lion. He says, Judah, I'm calling you a lion. I'm calling you, Judah, a lion. So you could say you're a lion, Judah. And if you've ever heard the term Lion of Judah, there's a reason. The Lion of Judah, we sing about it in a couple of our songs, the idea of a Lion of Judah. He says, you're a young lion that's finished eating his prey. Like a lion, he crouches down and lies there. Like a lioness, who dares to rouse him? That's metaphorical speaking. It's kind of cool stuff. But then he says to him, he says, Judah, the scepter. What is a scepter? A staff. Who has a scepter? Loki has a scepter. Yes. Thank you, son. Okay. No. What? Who holds a scepter? It is a symbolic thing. They also wear a crown. A king holds a scepter. So when you talk about a scepter, we're not talking about a magical mind control thing that will make some guy open a portal into space to bring aliens. Okay? He's talking about this scepter. He says, the ruler's staff, the king's staff, will not depart from Judah. Nor the, hey, it's right there in context, nor the ruler's staff from his descendants. He says, Judah, you are going to have a king in your line until the coming of the one to whom it belongs, the one whom all nations will honor. He says, Judah, someone is going to come from your line. They're going to be king. And no one's going to take that from him. And all of the world will honor him. And he says just a couple of things. He's going to tie his foal to a grapevine, the colt of his donkey. Do you know anybody that rode on a donkey, a colt? A couple of weeks from now. He washes his clothes in wine, red blood color, his robes in the blood of grapes. His eyes are darker than wine. His teeth are whiter than milk. And there's a symbol of he's going to look red and dirty, but inside, going to be clean. So, there's something going on here because Israel says, look, you're going to have a kid. One of your descendants is going to be a king and he will be king forever. We're going to come to that next week when we get to coronation. Spoiler, chapter 4 or 5. But anyway, so this is the promise that Israel, one of the promises that Jacob Israel made to his son Judah because God was doing something. So there are the four people when it comes to generations. So creation is four events. Generations is four people. Here are the four people and we're going to say them together on the count of three. 1, 2, 3. Okay, very good. So hold with me right there. This is where we finish Genesis. The nation of Israel that is getting bigger now because, you know, Israel had a lot of kids and they have more kids and it doesn't take too long. And they're here. And they are here for 400 years in the land of Egypt. I don't know why I keep cutting out. Everything's cutting out. They're here for 400 years in the land of Egypt. And the Pharaoh's dead. The next Pharaoh's dead. Joseph's dead. Jacob's dead. All these people dead. They all dead. But their descendants are still living there. And they're getting to be more and more. 400 years is a long time. That's twice as long as our country. Well, now it's almost, there's a math there that I'm not doing. We're at 250, so you can figure that out. But that's a long time. And so they grew and grew and grew. And the new Pharaoh that came in was like, dude, there's a lot of these people that aren't my people. And I'm a little concerned about them. Because if there's so many of them, what if they decide to rise up? So I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to make them slaves. I will make them slaves. That way I don't have to worry about them rising up in rebellion against me. And that leads us to chapter 3, which we're calling migration. Chapter 3 is migration. So on 3, you're going to say migration. 1, 2, 3. migration. And migration means to move from place to place. So we've got creation, generations, migration. And migration covers Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Four books of the Bible. And so there's a picture. Where's my pen? A picture here. Again, copyright Sean David Fitch, 2025. Do not steal this. But our little picture that we're going to remember here is this. Thank you. Yes. That is a pyramid. That is a pyramid. And that's the picture to help us remember. And so, okay, we got 10 minutes and we're going to do a lot of tens. Okay, so the first thing we see in this migration time is that the people are down here and they're crying out to God and say, God, where are you? You said you were the God of our father, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You'll hear that term a lot because those are important. That's that promise. God, you made this promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Where are you, God? Help us, deliver us. And God says, the time has come. So he raises up this guy, and we don't have time to talk about it. He ends up floating down the Nile River. We don't have a map here. You can't see the map right now. Sorry. Pretend there's a map there. He's floating down the Nile River and gets picked up in the household of Pharaoh, gets raised in Pharaoh's household, which is incredible because then he's able to speak and communicate in an incredible way. He eventually kills an Egyptian, it's frowned upon. And so he flees to the desert of Midian, and he's there for 40 years after he's grown up. And in the middle of an instant, God's like, okay, now it's time. And so Moses is out there shepherding his sheeps. And he's out shepherding his sheeps. And suddenly there's a bush that is there that is on fire, but it is not burning up. It is fire, that bush, 100%. And he goes and checks it out. And God says, Moses, take off your sandals because this is holy ground. Because I'm about to do something, Moses. He says, you're going to go to my people and you're going to deliver them out of slavery. You're going to help them migrate back to the promised land. What is the promised land? It's the land that I promised to your great, 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 great grandfather, Abraham. And so it starts with, here's how I'm going to do it. You're going to go to Pharaoh and you're going to say, let my people go. And Pharaoh's going to be like, no, no, no. He says, okay, fine. We're going to drop some plagues on you. And the Bible, actually, the word plagues isn't used. It's actually the word means wonders, because it's not necessarily just, I'm going to hate on you. I want you to see how wonderful and amazing God is. And so it starts with some plagues, and the first plague, and there are 10 plagues, by the way. There's a lot of tens here. So 10 plagues, that's the first thing we've got. And the 10 plagues, a couple of things happen. The first plague is, we're down here, and we've got our map. You can go to the next slide there. Yeah, okay, just hold right there. So they're down here in Egypt, and one of the plagues is Moses sticks his staff, the first plague, into the Nile River, and the entire Nile turns to blood. And it's not just this little spot. It's the entire thing, the longest river in the world, and everything that had Nile water in it. So they're in their houses, and their sinks and toilets, I don't know if they had toilets, anyway, are full of blood. That's nasty. And Pharaoh's like, oh, okay, no, never mind, just kidding, you're staying here. And so then it goes on, and there's some more plagues here. Get them in order. I don't want to miss them up. Then he goes to frogs, and there are frogs everywhere in the land. And I have a really cool story to tell you, but I don't have time to tell you about it. Time Kendra and I were driving somewhere, and there were literally frogs all over the road, and it stunk, and it was nasty. It was like, so I guess I did have time to tell you the story because I just told you. So anyway, it is, they're everywhere. And Pharaoh's like, okay, you can go. No, never mind. Stay here. I don't want to lose my slaves. And then the third one is gnats. And I don't know, like lately with this weather temperature stuff, like you go outside and you get the right spot and there's like, and it said that everything like the dust of the ground was covered in gnats everywhere. That must have been, you know how much of that, like sneezing out the gnats, you know, do that thing, you know what I'm talking about? I don't know if you do that, but I'm always like inhaling a gnat. Okay, and so that happened everywhere. But then we hit the fourth plague and there's an interesting thing that happens. God says, Moses, you know what, from this point on, I just want them to see my wonders. And the rest of these plagues are only going to be for Egypt. And so the next one, and I'll just list them all here. Flies were only in Egypt. The livestock of the Egyptians died. The hail fell only in the land of Egypt where the Jewish people, where the Israelites lived, the nation of Israel lived. They didn't get hail. Their livestock didn't die. The flies were like, wee, and just flew back. I don't know. And then there was boils. Sorry, did I say boils? Boils all over the Egyptians, hail, and then locusts destroyed all the crops. And then there was darkness, and this was wild. Darkness completely covered the land of Egypt, except for the land of Goshen where the Israelites lived. And I would love to see what that was like. You know, like just, we could like do fun puppet shadows. I don't know. Shadow puppets. Anyway, so, and then finally Pharaoh's like, okay, you can go. He's like, no, never mind. And Moses says, God says to Moses, I'm going to do one last thing. And this isn't an issue of Egypt versus Israelite. This is an issue of faith. Because I'm going to send death to the firstborn of every household in this land. And the only way to stop that death is what I need you to do is you're going to go and get a lamb that is pure and unblemished, that doesn't have any broken bones, that has no problems, that has no flaws. And that lamb, you're going to sacrifice that lamb. And you're going to spread the blood on the doorposts of your house. And then when death comes by and it sees the blood, it will pass over. It will keep going. And that's where we get the term Passover. And so a innocent, perfect lamb sheds his blood so that people live. It's not an accidental metaphor. And we did a Seder meal years ago. We walked through the pieces of Passover and why it's called Passover. So that brings in this moment. So the 10th plague, finally, Pharaoh's like, okay, go. Just get out. Get out. And of course, an amazing, wonderful, miraculous thing happens after that. They get to the edge, this whole nation. We're talking millions of people at this point. Okay, millions of people. They're at the edge of this body of water. And what is this body of water called? This is the Nile. This is the... Do you know anything about the Egyptian or the story of the Exodus? They cross the... Very good. The Red Sea. And so they get here and the Egyptian army is coming after them. Miraculously, God parts the Red Sea. The Egyptians walk through on dry ground to the other side. The waters come back down over the Egyptians and the Pharaohs. And by the way, I talked about this last week about how these were large nations. That was the end of the Egyptian dynasty. God, Moses, and the Israelites ended. The Egyptians still lived. They were still around. But they were no longer a world power as of that moment. So they crossed into, they crossed the Red Sea. Oh, yeah. And now, am I still on my map? Oh, yeah, I do. Okay. So they crossed the Red Sea, and God led them. And through this right here is a peninsula. And this is called the Sinai Peninsula, because right around here, you see that? Right around there was a mountain. Any guesses on the name of the mountain in the Sinai Peninsula? Mount Sinai, you guys are brilliant. Mount Sinai was right about there. And God said, I'm going to take my people down and they're going to worship me at Mount Sinai. And at Mount Sinai, God gives this chosen people, his Israelites, his people, the law and said, you're going to be different from all the other nations. And I'm going to give you my law. And he does it through what we call, oh, by the way, here's your fancy map. Fancy map, good. Like we call, after the 10 plagues, it leads to the 10 commandments. And the Ten Commandments. And the Ten Commandments aren't just, they aren't just 10 random things. They're actually the beginning of a whole group of laws that at Mount Sinai, God gives them these laws. And he says, here's going to be the laws that you're going to follow. And the Ten Commandments have two main categories. And just so you know, we're going to skip that video, okay, Jackson? Ten Commandments have two parts. First of all, is the connection with God. Commands 1-4. Are about your connection with God, and I'll read the quick summary instead of watching the video. Is no other gods. You shouldn't have any idols, even of God. You're not supposed to make an idol, even if it looks like God. Do not misuse the name of God. And then the fourth one is honor the Sabbath. Those are about your relationship with God, your connection with God. And then commands 6, 5-10 are about your connection with others. It says you're to honor your parents. You're not to murder. You're not to commit adultery. You're not to steal. You're not to lie. You're not to covet. Yeah, that's right. You're not to covet, because I had 4 here, and that's 4 + 6 = 10. And those are the 10 commandments that God gives there. But it's not just the 10 commandments that he gives. There's a whole bunch of other things. He gives instructions to build a place where God can show up physically and dwell among his people, called the tabernacle. And the tabernacle is important because it's a tent. We're going to skip right over to that. Did you do that? Oh, click that slide right there. Thank you. And the tabernacle is a tent where God can dwell, but it's just a tent. It's temporary. And so that's where God meets the people. And we did a whole series called Dwell about the tabernacle years ago. And then also there, God gives basically the book of Leviticus, all the rules for the nation, for the Levites, who are the descendants of Levi, who will become the priests. And the priests will not have any part in the land. We'll get to that next week. But they become the Levites. They're the priestly group. They're the ones that they're leading the worship. They're the worship leaders for the nation of Israel. And so they're there, and God gives that. So we have in Exodus continues with the law into Leviticus, and then we hit into the beginning of Numbers. Some of the law is there. And so that's where the Ten Commandments happen, there at Mount, which you can't see on the screen, but at Mount Sinai. And so they were there, and okay, good, you've got my rules, you've got my law. They were there for a while, okay, it was a year or two. And you've got my rules and my law, and now I'm going to give you, and you're going to go to the promised land. And he said, before you go, though, we're going to spy out the land. So you've got 10 plagues, then 10 commandments, and then 10 bad spies. Two were good. There were 12 spies, one representing every tribe, every nation, every descendant of Jacob, of Israel, is going to go into the land. And they went to the land, and they started here at Mount Sinai. They're here at Mount Sinai. I'll get my map there. Yeah. And then they went from Mount Sinai just straight up to about here. Is that about where my map is there? Next one for me. One more. Yeah. To Kadesh Barnea. And at Kadesh Barnea, the people were all there waiting. And this is the nation of Israel right here. So they're right at the border. They send spies in. And 12 spies, one representing every tribe, goes in. And they spy out the land. And they come back and they're like, wow, it's incredible. It's flowing with milk and honey buns. And if your kids are in Ignition, that's what they're eating right now. Milk and honey buns. It is flowing with milk and honey. And at least upstairs. And it's wonderful. It's amazing. But the people there are so big and there's no way we can do this. 10 spies said, no way. But two of them, Joshua and Caleb, said, oh, we can. We can do this. It doesn't matter how big they are because we've got God. And we did a whole series called Stuck from what happened in the book of Numbers there where they said, we can't do this. And so, what do you have there? Yeah, so at Kadesh Barnea, they began what we call 40 years of wandering. Oh, there's a pretty map again, I think, right? Pretty map, yeah. And then 40 years. 10 plagues, 10 commandments, 40 years of wandering. And God said, okay, fine. You don't think I can do it? Because the people, the 10 spies, got everyone else to start complaining to. God, who do you think you are? Brought us out of here in the desert. You're going to leave us to die. You suck. Why can't we go back to Egypt? We were as wonderful as slaves. Losers? Do you ever like, forget what God has done for you? I know I never do that. I know those Israelites are such losers. We're like, well, God has done so much for us, and how quickly we forget. And God said, fine, you don't think I can do this? And you're going to wander for 40 years. They're not lost. They're intentionally wandering in the Sinai Peninsula so that first generation that said God can't do it will die off until we have the second generation. And so they wander for 40 years. And so they're then, again, they're down here wandering in this whole area for 40 years. 40 years later, that first generation dies off. And again, we talked about this just last year in Stuck, or this year actually. It was in January. And they die off, and God leads them around. There's a bunch of things. Leads them around past this body of water. What's this body of water here? Nothing is alive in it, so therefore we call it the Dead Sea, right? Remember, we got the Med, the Dead, and the Red Sea. And so leads them around the Dead Sea up to this river. What's this river called? Anybody remember? The Jordan, very good. The Jordan River. It's an important river, people. We're going to hear a lot about this river. So they come up and they're on this side of the Jordan River. And right over on this side of the Jordan River is a city called Jericho. But we're going to stop before we get to Jericho because right here, God says, okay, guys, that first generation, they all died. And they were there at Mount Sinai when I gave the law. So you've got 10 plagues, 10 commandments. 10 spies, thank you, two were good. 40 years of wandering, and then the next thing we have is 10 again. Because what God did was before they go over, he says, I'm going to repeat my law to you. And so we have the book called Deuteronomy, which is Deuteronomos, which means second law. So God gave the law again. And you're going to find a lot of passages repeated that you would see in Exodus, repeated in Deuteronomy. Because right before they go into the land, they're repeating the law and going over it one more time. And so that's migration. We're going to say this really quick, and we'll read every word on that screen, at least starting at 10. Okay, together on three. One, two, three. 10 plagues. You following that story? You see how that works? Does that make sense? Yes? Something? Okay. So the characters in the story collide with their creator. We have all this tension. God, you can't bring us into the land. God, you're never going to give me kids. God, God, God. And there's all this tension, which that's the story. And so here's the 12 chapters. You're going to say them for me, the three we've already gone through so far. Chapter 1 is what? Creation. Okay, chapter 2 is? Generations. Chapter 3 is? Migration. And so that's where we end our story today. We're at the edge of the Jordan River. The promised land is there that God has given them. And they're waiting to go in. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for your word. And I know that the history is sometimes hard to follow, but just the beautiful pattern of you knowing that your humanity is just not right. And planning for our deliverance. Planning for one who would be the king that everyone would worship. Planning for a descendant that would bless the entire world. Planning for a spotless lamb that would give its life so that someone could live. We just thank you so much for that, God. And all the things that we talked about today, I pray that you'd help us to understand it, bring it together, and grow in our understanding and our love for you. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.